is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy. Ukraine, four presidents, the president-elect, Mr. Trump, the president of the United States, Mr. Biden, the president of Ukraine, that would be Mr. Zelensky, and the president of Russia, Mr. Putin. Four presidents, all going in different directions until now. Jeff, there's talk of negotiation. There's talk of withdrawal. There's talk of escalation. We know there are reports of North Koreans in action in the Kursk salient. All of this talk coming wintertime. What do you make of it, Jeff? Are we going to a stand down? Are we going to redouble? Are we going to escalation? Do you have a sense of it? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, let's start with the currently serving president, because at least now until 20 January, it's Joe Biden who has some trickier choices he can make. And he seems to be suggesting that he is going to try to stand firm with the Ukrainians. He announced recently, of course, that contractors could now be put into Ukraine, a very important decision that I think should have been made 2 years ago, which will speed the recovery and repair of Ukrainian equipment when it's damaged in battle or just needs repair. Number two, I think there's a greater possibility between now and 20 January, Mr. Biden might allow the Ukrainians to employ ATACMs at maximum range against Russian targets, because there needs to be some kind of a response due to the fact that the Russians have escalated with the presence of up to 12,000 North Korean troops entering the Kursk region in an effort to push the Ukrainians out of there. So Mr. Biden has some particular cards to play, and his Secretary of State, even today visiting NATO, said the Biden administration was going to accelerate mil aid and, to quote him, spend every dollar we have appropriated between now and January 20th. Mr. Putin, on the other hand, is continuing to talk about his terms for a negotiated settlement, which have not changed, John, in months. And they are ceding all the territory we claim as ours, the four provinces, some neutralization of the current government in Kyiv. Mr. Zelensky would have to go, and a claim by the Ukrainians that they would forestall any opportunity to join NATO or the EU for many, many years to come. Clearly, if we move towards negotiations, the Ukrainians, now the Zelensky, I think will want to do a couple things. One, they will want to retain that salient, at least a portion of that, that they control in Kursk, despite this upcoming offensive, because it's probably one of their best bargaining chips in any type of negotiation. And second of all, they're going to want to insist at a negotiation, while they might concede some territory, that they need some kind of a security guarantee if should Russia attack again. Now, that won't be NATO membership, but some kind of bilateral guarantee most would be best from the United States, of course, but some other European states. And finally, of course, let's talk about that other president, and that would be Mr. Trump, of course. And it's a little unclear. While he has been outspoken about cutting military aid to Ukraine, so as many around him, most notably his vice president, he's picked a Secretary of State, Mario Rubio, who at one point in time was a very strong supporter of Ukraine. And so one might not be certain that that's the direction he will necessarily take. Furthermore, Mr. Trump fully realizes that a substantial portion of that military aid we provide, about 70 cents for every dollar of military aid, actually benefits American industries. And he's always interested in those things that are part and parcel of the economy. So it remains to be seen exactly what he'll do. But the final thing I think we need to talk about, John, of course, is old man Winter, because he'll make a decision as well on whether or not an offensive by the Russians between now and December and into January is even feasible. And then lastly, the Europeans themselves, what do they do if, in fact, Mr. Trump goes forward with them, the things he said, and cuts or dramatically leaves efforts to support the Ukrainians? Do they take up the slack? That, of course, will be an important question.
The DOD, we're told there is a name, Pete Hegseth, looking for to be nominated for the Secretary of the Defense. I do not know the Pentagon. I've never been there. I've seen it. I've driven by it. But I'm told it is a vast organization where there's never been a successful audit of everything that is represented right by the Pentagon. So asking someone who is relatively unknown, I believe he's on television, but that doesn't make you universally understood. What is your impression of, I think he was a captain in the National Guard. What is your impression of Pete Hegseth so far? What you know of him?
Well, his nomination with that question, John, a surprise. You'd be hard-pressed, I think, to find anybody that worked in this field who would have had him on his list to be Secretary of Defense once Mr. Trump was elected. I mean, this is his first job in government at any level. He hasn't even been a city councilor, and now he's going to be Secretary of Defense. His primary background, as you suggest, John, is he's a Fox News journalist. He hosted Fox and Friends, particularly on the weekend. Apparently, this particular program was one that Mr. Trump really liked. It's even said by some people that during the broadcast on breaks, Hegseth would look at his phone immediately to see if Mr. Trump had tweeted out anything that had been said so far so he could reemphasize that. He did serve, as you suggest, in the military as a lieutenant and captain, a junior officer in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and one should recognize his service. He received two Bronze Stars in that regard. But frankly, military service really has, at that level, as a very junior officer, has very little to do with running the Pentagon. Our last couple of our Secretaries of Defense, Lloyd Austin, Jim Mattis, for example, Mr. Trump's first one, together they had 82 years of military experience that at very, very high levels, commanding regional component commands, being the vice chief of staff of services, et cetera. Hegseth had nothing of that. And one normally in the past, we've seen Secretaries of Defense picked who had vast national security expense. They had worked in the building. They'd been an assistant secretary or an undersecretary, or they'd worked on Capitol Hill in a think tank, or they'd worked in the Congress on the appropriate committees, or the person had vast corporate leadership experience, or a bit of both, because the Pentagon ultimately is the largest corporation on the planet, a budget of $900 billion, 2.3 million employees in uniform and civilian clothes, scattered all around the world. And this particular moment is probably one of those perilous for a new Secretary of Defense. Two ongoing wars, one in the Middle East, one in the Ukraine, of course, growing threats from Iran, growing threats from North Korea, as well as the PRC. So, and real questions about budgeting. The Congress has still not passed the budget for 2025. Costs of nuclear modernization. Might we move forward in arms control with the Russians? As far-fetched as that is, if we don't, a very high likelihood of us being involved in a nuclear arms race, which will cost vast amount of resources. Those are the kind of thing whoever gets to be Secretary of Defense is going to have to deal with.
Brussels is watching. NATO is watching. And NATO itself is troubled. The German election is scheduled for February. One of the questions being asked is Ukraine. Olaf Scholz's Zeitenwende is long since passed. There are other problems in NATO, but that's enough of one. Italy continues to support Ukraine. France is an unknown to me. The UK speaks of it rhetorically, but it has very little to offer. I'm told they have one brigade that could actually be deployed. Boris Johnson, the former prime minister, is on a book tour, saying if the U.S. withdraws or pulls back, there'll be NATO troops in Ukraine. Do you make anything of that, Jeff?
I do, John, but before we go into that, I even go back. One thing they're noticing already in the selections Mr. Trump is making, we talked about Pete Hegseth, but we've also seen that with Tulsi Gabbard as DNI and, my goodness, Matt Gaetz to be the attorney general, is the primary qualification for Mr. Trump's cabinet is loyalty above all. Not necessarily qualifications, not competence, not experience. It's loyalty. But the German elections obviously put Mr. Scholz in a very weakened position. It is very unlikely that Mr. Scholz will survive that. As chancellor, his party's popularity in Germany, I've read, has shrunk to 12%. Furthermore, as you suggest, President Macron, we know, sits atop a very, very weak coalition in France. So how NATO sticks together should the United States walk away from the Ukrainians will probably be a function, I think, of watching three countries. One would be the United Kingdom. And though Mr. Johnson said that about NATO troops, I have some skepticism that'll happen. But it'll be a real test for Keir Starmer. The second would be the Poles. The Poles have been very outspoken in trying to be a leader of NATO. And obviously their geography puts them perilously close to the Russian Federation. And the third country, interestingly enough, will be Italy, where the right-wing government in Italy has been a very, very strong supporter of Ukraine. But all these countries, I think, John, are trying to determine the following. And I was asked this when Mr. Trump was elected in 2016. Which way is the United States going longer term? Which way is the United States going longer term? Is Donald Trump the aberration, or was Joe Biden, the Atlanticist who united NATO and expanded NATO, is he the aberration? And sadly, many of them that I talk with now seem to think that the election answered that question. And as one person said to me the other day, American, wondering about the future of the United States and NATO, he said, you know, it's becoming increasingly difficult to explain to the average American why 350 million Americans have to defend 450 million Europeans from 150 million Russians.
Economic nationalism becomes nationalism. We're going to the Middle East. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS News. I'm John Batchelor.